Welcome to A New Lens with Comma Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within the different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Comma Good Capital. I'm here today with James Clement, and I am so excited for this opportunity to delve in a little deeper. I met James on a webinar and then before that in a previous Zoom. And I love his experience and I love his passion. You'll hear about that. I would say he breaks stereotypes. So no pressure. We'll see if that actually happens. James is a veteran rancher and an innovative leader in the agricultural technology, currently serves as the Senior Vice President of Grass and Rangeland at Earth Optics, which we'll learn, I'm sure, about here a little bit. In this role, he helps ranchers integrate cutting edge technology to map and quantify soil health and carbon capture potential, enabling informed land management decisions and unlocking new revenue opportunities. So for those of you who are listening in on the podcast, you will not be able to see what he is wearing and what he looks like, but he must be in a basement someplace, but this basement or a barn that's all wood. He's got some saddles and stuff around him. You are talking to a rancher, which I love. Do you normally have a cowboy hat on and you just took it off for this?
I try to take it off when I go indoors. Cowboy code.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. Purposely, I didn't read a bunch of your bio because I want you to kind of articulate. So let's start off with this. Tell us where you grew up and in that context, you know, where you went to school, and then a little bit about your career. And then I may jump in and then we'll kind of go from there. But just let us know who you are and what shaped you and a little bit about what you're doing today.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jeff. And I appreciate the background there. And I really appreciate what you're doing at Common Good Capital too. But so background historically, so both sides of my family have been ranching a long time. So my mother's Beggs Cattle Company, next year will be our 150th year in the ranching business in Texas. And then my dad's family's King Ranch, which is headquartered in Texas, but in a few other places in this country, California and Florida, and then throughout Texas. And we're almost our 175th year. And then also run a personal operation that I took over almost 15 years ago, since 1967. So all that background to say, I grew up in South Texas, but then my dad, well, he worked for King Ranch for 41 years. He got moved to Dallas. And so most of my childhood was in Dallas, getting out to the ranches as often as possible. Went away to school, play lacrosse, a little school in Baltimore called Goucher College. And again, always working in ranches. And then during college too, was doing some other internships right after college, worked in Australia and Florida and Texas on some other ranches and big cattle stations down there. And then joined the Marine Corps, enlisted in the reserves first, and went back to work at King Ranch full-time, and then went back to become an officer. So just, you know, during your 20s, people jump around. So I went back to the Marines for a longer tenure, became an infantry officer, got to serve in a few places and work with a lot of great Marines and other forces all over the world. And then came back just before I turned 30 and did a 10-year stint at King Ranch running the horse program. I came to work at the horse program, and then my boss, who was a big mentor of mine, Blitzen, retired. And then I got promoted to being the horse manager. And then when that happened, I started buying heifers from King Ranch and growing my own operation. Later took on some partners, Poncho Ortega Jr. and Sr. And then my siblings own a few cows with us. And then my wife and I own some cows separately. So all in the background, we were growing our own operation that became regenerative. But, you know, even I was probably later to learn that term. We were doing what the definition of regenerative, but we didn't call it that. We were just trying to take care of the land. At the end of my King Ranch tenure, I became a land man and worked for King Ranch, so from the landowner side. And for those besides the TV show, a land man is the middleman kind of between anybody that wants to enter a ranch for any project that doesn't have to do with kind of wildlife and livestock, basically. So fence lines, power lines, pipelines, renewables, oil and gas, carbon projects. And so when I was there, and I'll just bring us all the way up to today, Exxon funded a study with a group called B Carbon out of Houston, Rice University, Baker Institute, a guy named Jim Blackburn, who's a great guy. He's an environmental lawyer, but I think he calls himself a common sense environmental lawyer, where he's trying to find the best answer that satisfies the common good, both, you know, from a cash flow side and for the land stewardship. And, you know, we take all day talking about mentors, but I'll point them out as they come up. And then Lars Dierud, the CEO of Earth Optics, was on the job doing the sampling work. At the same time, I was trying to start selling carbon credits from our operation because we satisfy the needs for additionality and permanence, et cetera. And so it all kind of came together. And I realized that Earth Optics was the ones doing the sampling on both. And Lars, the space physicist, he said to me that first few hours we met that he'd sold a couple of companies to Google Earth. And when he took over it very early on in this company's history, he wanted to create the Google Earth of soil. And I was just fascinated by not only the carbon markets, but all the things that we're able to do, combining actual soil sampling with imagery, with all this other management data, and produce all sorts of through machine learning and digital twins and all these concepts that are so fascinating, truly benefit soil health and productivity, and then additional cash flow streams with some of these ecosystem service markets. And so that was about 3 years ago. I asked him for a job a couple months later. So today, still ranching. About to take over our fifth regenerative managed ranch. My day job is Earth Optics. Worked now become an investor advisor with a few other ag tech companies and still in the marine reserves. So, but we live
Yeah,
in South
you got a
Texas
lot on
here.
your plate.
Yes, sir. My wife has told me to get better at saying no, and I will eventually.
Okay, so I've got just a few popcorn questions here that probably shouldn't take long, but just in the context of what you just shared. Number one, a rancher to me, I grew up in the state of Oregon, and I don't want the statement to come out wrong, but I don't think of a rancher as somebody who is thinking about regenerative farming, regenerative ranch land. That's kind of one comment. And the second comment is, what is regenerative ranch land? You know, what does that mean, and how did all this impact you to do what you're doing today?
So ranchers are the original stewards. The issue is ranching is a tough line of work. And so often the best things in terms of making money on a ranch are very often the worst things for the ranch. All sorts of opportunities could come on there and not be the best thing for the land. I'll just be very vague in that comment so I don't weigh into that. And then also over farming, overgrazing, you know, all of these things to say, well, how do I make more money this year rather than how do I look at a 10-year plan or a 30-year plan of how to make the place better? And this will come to when we talk about, I guess, stewardship and other things later. But, you know, so what is the definition? Regenerative is the third or fourth or fifth or 20th term. Holistic stewardship, sustainable. Regenerative is kind of the current one. And they all mean something differently depending on who is saying them. But what they all allude to is every year, are you making the place better than it was before? Maybe even every day, but are you improving the natural resources? Are you improving the healthier animals? What are you doing to make the place better? And so to make that more tangible is when we took over this ranch in this personal place at 13, it had gone through, you know, kind of a typical ranching operation for a long time, well run, beautiful ranch. But we went through the heavy drought of 11, 12, and 13 in South Texas, where it hit a lot of places, but it was bad in South Texas. So we destocked completely. And then we started. So at the end of 13, I bought that first set of heifers and started growing it back. And luckily, because that ranch was bought originally fenced pretty heavily. And then we've since over the years have bought some additional land. That was also what I used to call overfenced. But the good news is that means that I can provide a rest and rotational kind of grazing structure. And so, all that being said, typical South Texas stocking rates is it takes 20 to 30 acres of grassland for one cow to have enough groceries for the year to produce a calf to be healthy without overfeeding and putting all sorts of inputs into her. Now, so we started in that range. Today, we're sitting at less than 12 acres a cow, and we'll probably get under 10 acres a cow. So I have more cows than I've ever had. So some people say, well, are you overgrazing? Well, no, because of the way we rest and rotate and move the cows around, because of we've been very deliberate about where we put water into places where it can spread that out. We now have more quail, which quail is a great test in South Texas of are you doing the right thing with your cattle? Because they can live very much in concert when managed correctly, because quail like to have room to roam around and they have, you know, they're small birds. So you can't just leave the grass to get, you know, grow high and be old and dead. The cows need to graze it, stomp it, put their fertilizer onto it. And so the quail have their pathways and they have their bunch grass and their different kind of species out there where they can hide and lay their eggs and that kind of thing. We've started monitoring these things every year. It's like we add another layer of what we're monitoring. We've removed invasive brush species. We've added the amount of quail per acre. Now, the rain has been better the last few years, so it'll be a better justification when the rains, you know, when we're stretched on rain again. Our deer are growing, our water is cleaner. We have more grass, not less, even though we have more cows. Our soil has improved. And so then the offshoot of that is that we're also able to sell carbon credits off that land. And then everything I said ties into this concept of additionality. Additionality is, again, back to regenerative, is are you making the place better than you found it? Because if you're grazing that grass and then allowing it to rest and recoup, then that's speeding up the carbon cycle. So if I wasn't grazing it, there becomes a plateau effect very quickly. But because the cattle are out there, they're speeding up that machine that is photosynthesis, bringing that carbon into the ground and then pushing that carbon deep into the root system. And so even with what I feel is a very good cattle operation, we are already making more money as a ranch from selling carbon credits, even at this reduced price of market. And so I kind of tied two things together there based on your question. But so what is regenerative? It is improving a place as you graze and as you make money on it. And then sustainable could mean the same thing, but the number one sustainability, as we say in the King Ranch Institute, which is a group I'm involved with, King Ranch started and I'm now serving on the board, is the number one sustainability factor in land has got to be economic sustainability. Because you could do all the good things in the world, but if you're just burning money through the place, that is not sustainable, no matter how much money you have to just float that. And so we are seeing that that goes hand in hand with good stewardship.
So another quick question. King's Ranch, is that the name that I see on Ford F-150s?
Yes, sir. My great 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 grandfather was Captain Richard King. We don't know if that's his real name because he left home in New York when he was 12 years old, jumped on a ship, became a riverboat captain eventually in Florida, and then made his way to South Texas. And then prior to the Civil War, he started buying land. And then post-Civil War, he started making a lot of money. He sent over 1 million head of cattle up the trail from 1865 to 1875 and just kept growing the land asset too. And when he started buying land, everybody thought he was an idiot because amongst other drought cycles, we have about a 50-year extreme drought period in South Texas. So 1850, 1900, 1950s, and then the drought we just came out of not too long ago. And so when he was buying that land, it was worth nothing because no, it was worthless to most people. But yes, we have a relationship with Ford. We have a relationship with a bourbon company. We have our own saddle shop, our own John Deere dealership. So part of our business is this retail and branding and everything as well.
Okay, so again, I'm going to speak in stereotyping, so this may not be true, but it's my perception. So I don't picture King Ranch or ranchers talking about carbon sequestration. So reconcile for that stereotype. Why do you actually care about carbon in the ground?
Carbon is the number one metric to determine healthy soils, which means healthy grasslands, healthy forbs for all the animals to eat, whether grass for cows, forbs for deer, and everything else to burrow and live. So a rancher, if you say nothing else, a rancher, most ranchers that I know that I'm involved with would want to make their land better because they view generational business that they want to hand something better down to their children than they got from their parents. And so that's kind of the first statement. The second statement is I believe that a lot of these markets, because it doesn't fit the stereotype like you're saying, the people that also don't align with that stereotype have promoted this aspect. So people in the financial sector, people that would be honestly kind of more tree huggers, right? And tree huggers and ranchers have more in common than they ever give each other the credit for, but they just naturally don't usually run in the same circles. So a lot of ranchers also say, like, I don't want you to think that you have to pay me for something that I can do better. I feel like I'm already doing a good enough job. And that's a reaction by a bunch of farmers and ranchers is like, look, I'm trying to feed the American people. And as every year we get, Texas loses 1,023 acres a day to development. And we're already running out of water as a state. Say this model anywhere in the country in terms of where there's a population increase, but Texas is extreme. And the reason I entered into this business is kind of twofold. One, the data we're collecting defends the livestock business because it says, look, well-managed animals on grassland. We have less animals in North America, four-legged animals, than we did prior to European settlement, right? Between the bison and all the deer species that we had back then. So I removed methane from the equation because methane was much higher levels prior to European expansion into this country. People don't like to draw that conclusion, but that's a fact. Secondly, is that again, well-managed lands, they are already doing all these things. And the way we've sold this concept is, hey, if you do this differently, if you're better at this. And so the messaging has been wrong. It's been saying like, hey, honestly, it's like your stereotype right there. And I'm not saying you, but the
Sure.
general stereotype is that like, oh, ranchers aren't doing right. Let me show them how to do right. And it's like, as ranchers are holding on to the few acres and the fewer and fewer acres, that are available to grow food in this country, it's they view themselves and farmers as well serving a bigger purpose, meaning I'm trying to feed a nation that is putting more and more stress for me to grow more and more nutrients, proteins, et cetera, on fewer and fewer acres. Productivity alone, being able to live up to the American consumer's needs, is more important than a carbon credit or than any kind of service market. So, and then here's the other thing I'll say is that natural resources have been sold, whether that's wildlife leases, whether that's water being sold to communities or being or sold to, you know, for drilling or something like that, like for frack water. Like we have already gotten into the business of selling natural resources. These markets are actually paying people to retain and improve those resources. And like, for example, somebody else is in the carbon space, Roam Ranch, R-O-A-M, they have a website and everything too, but they bought a ranch that had been in another family for 100 years. And they said that family, when they bought the ranch, there's a creek in the ranch. And they said, there's never been water in that creek except after a big rain. They're running a regenerative operation with bison, which they should turn to beef, but I'm way into that. That's just my opinion. And now that creek is holding water almost year round. And that's what I'm talking about. Like you improve the soil, you improve the habitat, you improve the wildlife, the bird, the other big partners of ours. I actually went to DC a few weeks ago with the Joint Venture 8, the group that's trying to identify, maintain, and bring back bird populations all over the country. Well, bird populations are best in health in well-managed rangelands, and that comes with the livestock. And so this goes hand in hand. Back to the point about the tree huggers and ranchers kind of being apart from each other. And actually, I have a friend and I met in a school called Ranching for Profit, and he called himself a prairie hugger, which I thought was funny too. But same concept. Like many of us want to see these lands to their full potential, not back to where they were 200 years ago, because we're in a point where you can't turn back to that moment in time, but how can you improve? And by the way, like even in South Texas, 200 years ago, there was no wildlife because there was no invasive brush species that had come up from Mexico that brought the cover for the wildlife, or there was very little wildlife, I'll say. Now you've got a balance of, as if I'm a farmer rancher, like I'm looking at not only my cattle and whatever I'm farming, but this agritourism, you know, all the wildlife, whether that's photographic or consumptive, and all the opportunities there. So it pays a landowner more money to take care of their resources because of all the things that they can do because of that.
Well, you know, and to me, this is where I get excited about regenerative ranch land, farmland, is because the truth is starting to come out around the economics. And so you get the economics that are probably going to lead the way for most people, and then the other benefits follow. Whereas I think historically, people have been trying to lead with the environmental side of things, and that didn't seem to work. But now when you can prove out mathematically how it's better, and then you see, oh my gosh, the environment is so much healthier. Have you seen the documentary Roots So Deep?
There's a few out there that I have not seen, but I'm aware of the content. And let me make a point on what you just said. You're right. The environmental angle has not worked alone to save these lands, to protect these ecosystems. Capitalism will do so. And so allowing these markets to develop and increase, and soil carbon credits alone in 2.5 years of me paying a lot of attention to them have gone from about $16 a ton to in the mid 30s a ton, and they're ever increasing. And there's a very near future where carbon, water credits, maybe even credits on biodiversity, biology, yep, nutrients, could be making more money than anything else, any commodity that you can produce from that land. Stewardship will now pay you more than any productivity you can possibly maintain on that operation. And that is what's going to get people to truly pay attention and to shrink that ever-increasing destruction of these ecosystems. Is like that. That's how you stop it, with putting money in the pockets of these people. They're looking at real estate, they're looking at highways, they're looking at high-speed trains, they're looking at all these renewables projects and oil and gas projects. Like, if you want to protect these lands, you've got to make incentives for people to pay them to be good stewards. And that's why I'm so excited about these markets and why I'm in this space.
Okay, to that point, this is a philosophical and a practical question. What would you say if your kids were to ask, how are you trying to change the world? And I don't care if it's in a small sense or a big sense, but what are you about? What are you trying to fight for? What do you believe in?
You know, the Marine Corps teaches you to be part of something much bigger than yourself. That's like probably the simplest lesson, to serve something bigger than yourself, I guess. And we're very lucky. We've got 400 years of ranching history behind us, and very few, I mean, I've got families on both sides, but only some of us are combined on with both of these operations. And so to be able to serve these ranches and these lands, this is something much bigger than any impact I as an individual could ever make. If I could be a part of something much bigger, you know, as I've taken this jaunt into these, you know, again, ranching on my own and doing these other things with these great companies that I work with, I think it feeds that need because ag tech, climate tech, like it is actually there. We are solving real problems. There's also a whole nother subject about the morale of the rancher and farmer. We have done everything to make those jobs not fun. And like, look, somebody will take less pay or make less money as long as they love what they're doing. And we have cowboys, ranchers, farmers, with all the things that we have to do with cattle or commodities today to grow them the right way. We have, and so I love being in this ag tech space that can make those jobs easier so they can make these people passionate about their day-to-day lives. And so I guess to answer your question, it's being part of these organizations much bigger than me and trying to do my part to carry on their traditions, whether that's Marine Corps or these ranches, but then also trying to solve problems. Because that's the other thing too. People in agriculture are very similar in the fact that we often get very focused on something that is the 6-inch problem right in front of your face. And we pass on everything that could make our whole lives better, easier, and more profitable. And so if I could help bring those things into the equation to make people get this longer term view, I think that's a pretty good way to change the world. You know, again, this is not me as an individual. This
Sure.
is me with working with really great teams on all sides.
Well, actually to that point, in Roots So Deep, and I'm assuming there are other documentaries out there just for our listeners, I would highly recommend it. There's four series to it. Even if you just watch the first and the fourth, you'll get the idea. But you essentially have a professor out of, I think it's Arizona State University, if I'm not mistaken, and it's over a 5-year time period. And they basically are looking at ranchers, side-by-side ranchers. One is doing it regenerative, the other is not. And you actually see, I mean, it's just amazing. You see some of the struggle that traditional ranch land imposes. So for example, it's just not as profitable. But then you also realize they don't talk and they're not sharing ideas. And then some, you know, we all, but human nature, I know what I'm doing and whatnot. So it, you know, what you're doing is highly impactful and it's amazing. A lot of it is just retooling people to, hey, here's a different way, another way to do it. You're trying to accomplish the same goal, but you know what? There may be a way to do that over here that you hadn't thought about. And so I'd highly, highly recommend that.
That is an issue with a lot of farmers and ranchers is they get locked into their own operation. And I feel like one thing I've done to develop myself is I'm constantly the least experienced or knowledgeable person in every room I'm in, because I keep going to these places where I don't know anything or not as much as the people that I could be surrounding myself with. And that's been a lot of fun for me, whether it was horses back then, whether it's growing my own cattle operation. Like, I'm lucky to have a lot of people that I can call, look up to, and ask questions to. My uncles on my mother's side, Ed Farmer and George Beggs, you know, this has been their careers. So I can talk to them about, you know, what they've seen come and go. About to be dealing with this new world screw worm in South Texas. And I've got people in South Texas that I'm friends with that lived through the last episode of this. And so I've seen that as a gap where people don't ask questions and aren't keeping their eyes open. And I try to force myself to always be somebody that is doing that. But you got to swallow your pride and realize
yeah.
that, hey, you know, a lot of people know more than me about a lot of subjects.
One other comment that you had made earlier, just talking about what it does to the farmer. I was talking to some organic farmers, this was probably like 5 years ago, and they described for them, and really thinking about from a legacy standpoint, they were so thrilled to be doing organic farming. You know, you kind of asked them why, and there was probably two answers they had. And I love the way they described this. They said, look, in the case of farming, they said, organic farming is like driving a stick shift again, as opposed to just an automatic, like you're driving again. Whereas they would say conventional farming was, you know, it's at scale. You're just trying to, you're this machine and you're not really farming. And so it's not, you lose some of that fun and frankly, the art. And the second thing was just, I mean, a number of them said, look, if farming was to stay the way that it was, I would not wish my kids and their grandkids to be doing this. One, from just a health perspective, one from an economic perspective, but then you saw when they do it in this fashion, I mean, they were crying. A couple of them were crying about just how meaningful it was just to have this transition. And the legacy part of it was became rich for them. So it's to your point, this is not just about economics. It's not just about output. It's about the lives of the farmers and their kids for generations.
We have done a pretty bad job recruiting, too, to get people into ag, right? Like, again, a decreasing population, an older population. The average age of land operators, not owners, is like in the mid-60s or something, retirement age, basically. And that's, again, another reason why all of these ag tech platforms are so interesting, because I don't know what will recruit a young boy or girl into this space. Maybe it could be what we're doing at Earth Optics. Maybe it could be the old traditions of cowboying. Maybe it could be RanchBot Frontiers, these other companies I'm involved with that are trying to use AI or advanced software to monitor and manage all of these things. And so, like, we've got to use every tool we can to try to recruit people. And then one day they kind of wake up and realize, hey, I am a rancher. I didn't think I was, but because I was I'm an engineer and I was focusing on all these other things, but I'm growing grass and feeding livestock, or I'm growing organic fruits and vegetables for a population. Like, that's so I love hearing that.
So, full transparency for this comment, I've invested in a fund, FUND, that invested in a company called Halter HQ. And so I've gotten to know them, and they're out of New Zealand. They've actually just come to the US in the last couple of years. They just did a follow-on offering. They're now $1 billion or $1 billion in size. They're the ones that do the monitoring and move it started out literally with dairy cows and moves them around virtually through sounds and vibrations. And so I look at that to your comment. I don't think the average person would realize that you can create a $1 billion company using technology, and then the impact that that's having on the farmers' lives and the impact it's having on the cows, because they know, you know, again, I'm not a spokesman for them. They know whatever, 350 data points every X amount of minutes or seconds. And so they can monitor and figure out, oh, this cow is probably, something's wrong because it's off its normal cadence or whatever it is. So I do think when we talk about this, we try to, especially with wealth advisors, we're trying to infused that, like, this is not, regenerative is not some boring going back to the old way. It's going back to the old way, but leveraging technology and stuff that's very forward thinking. And so I think the more people see examples of this, I think the more excited. The other thing I'll say is, I do feel like in the impact investing space, more and more, especially the younger generation, they very much are now in line with having purpose and meaning alongside of capital. So I hope that this will benefit, you know, agriculture as a whole, and I feel like it will. To that point, I think I've asked you enough about stewardship, but if you have any other thoughts around stewardship, happy to hear some more comments. But let me switch to, this is kind of a personal thing, and you can answer however you want. When did you realize the power of capital, and what does that mean to you?
You know, what I keep thinking in my head when you ask that question is that, like, the ability to start up a ranch or farm is unattainable Yep. by a normal person. And so that's why we're seeing all of these high net worth individuals buy up all the ag land in this country. The other thing too, on a farmer ranch, like on a typical farmer ranch, you're looking at longer than a lifetime to pay back the cost of buying that ranch. And so when it comes to cap, like, again, the folks at Halter, Earth Optics, any of these companies out there, like, if we can provide any ability for people to get to speed up the process of paying down the investment of wanting to be involved in the agriculture markets, I mean, that's one of the huge powers of capital that it just feels unattainable right now. Like, yeah. Some of our best recruiting young farmers and ranchers out there can't get in the business, because they might be, you know, talented enough to work on a place, but they'll never get to a place where they can own their own unless they take a town job for 20 years. And then at that point, they've kind of passed their age where they're going to learn all their new tricks. And they still can, obviously, but I don't think I've had a shining moment where I realized that. But I do love the fact that when you finally break through to showing people a good idea in all of these fundraising conversations I'm in now, and all of these unicorn type investments, when it comes down to all these companies that are out there, it's when you can turn the lights on for somebody that is not involved in ag, and then you can see how that can benefit your operation. I guess that's not really the power of capital so much as the power of coercion or just salesmanship. But I mean, that for me, I tell people, like, I'm doing all these things that I said at the beginning of the call so I can get to the life of ranching again. I guess that's the power of capital, is getting back to a simplistic life.
But you bring up an interesting point, because we work with a group, an asset manager, who in their own way is trying to help solve that capital problem. And this is not to be any type of a pitch or anything, but just the need that they're filling in is, and basically what they do is provide long-term control of land through leases without having to have all the upfront capital. So from your perspective, how valuable is that? And I'll give you the example. So the majority of my first career is in real estate, commercial real estate, from all different types. We put together real estate investment trusts, from restaurant properties to hotel properties. These are all segregated, like 9 different flavors. And so if you look at the restaurant industry, you have restaurant and fast food, family style, casual dining, the list goes on. You have the mindset of some who say, I want to own all my own real estate. And then you have the mindset of others to say, I don't really want to own any of it. Just let me control it through leases and I'm fine. From a rancher's perspective, how do you view that? Do you have to own it? Can you control it through a lease? Just any thoughts on that?
So my wife and I own a little place here that we live on. I manage a place that my uncle, my dad owned that we were talking about. We are now about to take over our 5th ranch. And so 3 of those will be leased. And at this point, we are leasing a lot more country than we own. And that is the only way to scale an operation. And the other good news that I would say that landowners should seriously consider, and I think kind of what you're talking about with some of these folks like Agriculture Capital, is that you need to find the talent. You look at anything where they take somebody and on a meteoric rise. Sports are a great example. You take somebody that's talented and you give them an opportunity and you pay them a ton of money to represent you and your colors and everything. And what we've found, and I don't want to say where, because, you know, I'm always vying for them, but what we've found is that absentee landowners, high net worth landowners, don't have the time or maybe even the passion to be day-to-day stewards of their place. And so going into a long-term lease, because the gone are the days where you can do this 1 or 3 year leases, because 3 years is just when you can pay back in most markets a cow-calf operation. And by the way, the cattle market's extremely high, but the input costs are extremely high. Jason Sawyer, a friend, just made a comment the other day that about 12 years ago was the actual high of the cattle market, because the net is not that high, even though the beef market's so high, right? And same when it comes to leasing country. And we've even gotten to a conversation where it's like, look, we want to control your place for free. We don't want to pay you to lease it. But when you come here, it's going to be better every time you come here. And so it's not a lake house, right? It's land, and most people own these places. They have a place to hunt. They want to see the animals. They want to take their family out. They want to be as beautiful as they can, as it can be. And so, like, getting into these arrangements where you find talented people that have the energy to take on these long-term leases, I think that is the most scalable opportunity right now for ranchers, because buying land is off the table. But you're getting to a point where, I mean, again, in probably 5 years, I can get to where ranching is my profession. It is not all of these other things, because we can continue to scale this on the side and make all the land that we work on better than we found it too.
One of the interesting things, and then I'll get to my last question, is, so if I go back to my restaurant days, we had a portfolio of 2,500 restaurant properties and all long-term triple net lease structures. You know, as the landlord, you'd own these things. The tenant needed that spot in order to sell their burgers or whatever it is. But they weren't really incentivized. I mean, at one level, they're incentivized to keep it looking nice. But what's interesting to me about ranch land or farmland is there is an, especially if the farmer gets it, as well as the landlord, what the farmer does on the land equally, I don't know if it's equally, you can challenge this if you want, not only benefits them, but it also benefits the value of the land long-term for the landholder. So it's really a wonderful marriage that if you both on the same page, it really can be a win-win. Am I thinking about it right?
100%. I mean, you look at Texas land on a 50-year trend, and it's almost better than the S&P in terms of just like a well-managed S&P account. And so, like, again, every moment it becomes more attainable to own it. But to your point, if I'm looking at 2 ranches to buy, and one has been stewarded with a high regard for the land, that's absolutely going to provide more value. And so if that land is ever sold. Or again, if the absentee landowner ceases to care about the daily opportunities on the place too, well, now you can go farm out the wildlife opportunity or other enterprises on the place. Nobody wants to visit your place. And there's now a whole business of Airbnb type opportunities for visiting these ranches, right? And nobody wants to go to a place that has nothing moving, you know, no beauty, no good water. They want to go to those places that have natural beauty. Natural beauty takes work. Like, we screwed up the balance when we started expanding into this country years ago, you know, hundreds of years ago. And so you can't just leave it alone and let it maintain. If you leave land alone, then it becomes invaded with invasive grass and brush species that are usually not what is best for the native populations of any animals. And then your water maybe goes dry, your banks don't keep on your creeks, and something's going to find that and exploit it. And so, like, you must manage the land to make it better to keep it beautiful. And so that's the balance that I think good stewards, good ranchers provide on an operation, whether they own or lease it.
All right, last question. And this is a hard question. You can make it hard or make it easy. If you could have one dream come true or two in your lifetime, what would it be? And if it's helpful to take off your family out of this equation, I'll do that for you. Because obviously, generally, that's people's first thing. So maybe non-family, is there a dream or two for you that you go, yeah, I'd love to see this come true?
Professionally, you know, that news that you mentioned about Halter, I mean, it's huge. I wish, you know, I'm sitting out there trying to talk to people not in ag tech about the opportunities in ag tech. And I see it as a service to our country, right? I'm food security in this country, right? I wish that would be taken seriously now. And I wish money was poured into it where we could make mistakes more quickly. Companies could rise and fall more quickly because, you know, we have a lot of good ideas out there, but I don't like seeing these really good opportunities fade away just because perhaps they don't have the person that's the development person there that can sell the concept well enough. This carbon credit market, it took 30 years. You know, I've talked to people that were trying this in the early 90s, and every major financial crash or world event just put this on the back burner. I mean, just putting a higher focus, and I'm catering this, I think, to your audience, I guess, in the dream scenario, is that, like, to take a harder look at these opportunities, because it is really changing the agriculture landscape. And this country, is our founding fathers were all in ag, right? Like, the American cowboy is the symbol of this country, and the American farmer is as well. And it's like, how do we put a higher emphasis on them and strengthen them more quickly? And I guess, so just to be part of that, I mean, I feel like I'm trying to be part of it, but I mean, that would be a dream for me, because we've lost that connection and that enthusiasm, I think, for agriculture as a whole in this country. And so I think that could swing us back in the right direction.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to jump on today. It was fun to get to know you better. I commend you for not only what your profession is, but I love the way that you are actively participating in this idea of stewardship, and that you're breaking, you know, maybe my stereotype, if you want to say that or not, but appreciate it. Any resources that you would recommend for people if they want to learn more about regenerative ranch land, regenerative farming?
You know, great starts are Roots So Deep. Even though I haven't seen it, I apologize for not seeing it, but sure. You know, that is a great, you know, initial exposure. Understanding Ag is a great online resource. Ranching for Profit, King Ranch Institute for Ranch Management. I mean, I could name Noble Research. But then also on the video side, the Common Ground, the sequel, those two movies are fabulous too. Now, again, they take the kind of most high into the right view of this. So proceed, you know, tread carefully when you kind of get mixed into all that, because I don't want anybody to take any way it's all falling apart and nobody's out there looking out in the best interest. So all of those things should be taken with a grain of salt and a bigger picture of what is out there. But I would encourage them, I mean, Earth Optics, like, go to our website and see what we've got. We've got our own podcast there too that talks about all of these farmers and ranchers that are making these really intelligent decisions, making these really forward-thinking operational decisions. And so, but there's a ton out there, and I'd be happy to be a resource to people.
Okay, wonderful. Well, don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new investors find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Until next time, I'm Jeff Schaefer.
This- This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.